And I invite you to turn in your copy of God's Word to the book of Exodus, chapter 20, Exodus 20, verse 8. The last two Lord's Days were really wonderful because I got to go back to my old church in Colorado Springs. That was my old stomping grounds 25 years ago. And we went back to Village 7 Presbyterian Church. And as I was there, I had the opportunity to remember so many wonderful things. I walked into the old sanctuary, but we worship in the new sanctuary. I say new. It was built just as we were leaving 25 years ago. So it's been around for 25 years. It's not new. In fact, they had already expanded it even more beyond that. But the old sanctuary, they were just getting ready to remodel it. So I got in just at the nick of time, and to see it with its old wooden beams and its beauty. It's about the size of maybe a little bigger than this. And it was just amazing. I sat there and I reflected how impossibly young I was when I first got there in 1990 with this most beautiful creature on my side in my first year of marriage. And I remembered, as I looked at those old beams, where I first was introduced to the Trinity Hymnal, where I heard for the first time songs such as the one that was sung this morning, "'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus." I'd never heard that before because I had always worshipped in Spanish, which you all will too in heaven. And it was here in this place that we learned, this is the first time I heard expository preaching through books of the Bible. I had never heard that. And it was here that we learned how to share our faith using evangelism explosion. And it was in that place that all these different wonderful things happened, and I was able to remember them. It was like watching ghosts, and I could see the great preacher, Bernie Kuiper, standing up there, all 6 foot, whatever he was, tall and imposing, looking down on us stern from on high whenever he used his height to great effect. And all that came back and also forced me to remember the intervening years and everything that's happened in between and to see the goodness of God in all of that. Remembering is important. And as you look at our text today, Exodus 20, verse 8, it starts by saying, remember. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Thus far the reading of God's Word, may He bless it to our hearing this morning. As you know, we're very nearly the end of our series looking at the vision of our church, who it is that we are, who do we want to be, the values that we want to hold as a church. And we've been looking especially at this idea that we're called to renew the culture and to enter, not just to understand the culture from afar, but to engage in and to shape it with the gospel. And so the last few times we've been looking at things that are peculiar to the Christian faith that make us stand out from the rest of the culture, but to which we need to call the culture back. And one of those is the idea of Sabbath, that of the Lord's Day, this day where we gather as God's people to worship, a day in which He gives us to rest physically, for we need it, a day in which we are to rest spiritually, because we especially need that as well. We saw that this is a day of, as the Heidelberg calls it, the festive day of rest. It's a day of joy, a day of spending time with our family, our church family, and with God, remembering who we are and the great privilege and standing we have before God. That's what we've been learning, and we did that right before I left. I'm not going to rehearse all the particulars of the Lord's Day again and how to keep it and so on, but I do want us to focus particularly on that beginning phrase, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy, to set it apart as a distinct day. Joel Beakey, that wonderful pastor and theologian from Michigan, has pointed out that there are 5 major themes to which the Sabbath points. He's done that in one of his writings. What I want us to do this morning, I'm going to use those 5 things as themes as a basis, and I want us to see that they actually flow out from this call to remember the Sabbath day. In other words, when you remember the Sabbath day, you also are to remember creation, you are to remember eternity, you are to remember your soul, you are to remember your King, and you are to remember grace. These are the things that we are to remember. Anytime that we gather for worship, anytime we gather as God's people on the Lord's Day and we remember the Sabbath, We do indeed remember these things. So let's look at the first one. To remember the Sabbath is to remember creation. But why is that? Well, the answer is right in the very text. Look at verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. The Sabbath, the Lord's day, is not divorced from the pattern that God established at creation. It is rooted in creation. So the idea of setting aside this one day is not something that began when God gave us his law at Sinai. It begins at creation. It is what we call a creation ordinance, along with marriage and along with labor. And so it's very, very important. And the first thing we see as we remember the Sabbath, which means remembering creation, is that we are called to emulate God in that very pattern. He created in 6 days, and then he rested one. And he calls us to that same pattern. Why? Because if you remember from that same passage in Genesis, Genesis 1:27 tells us that we were created in his image. And that means we reflect him and we do as he does. That very next verse, Genesis 1:28, says that we are to have dominion over the whole of the creation. And the way that we exercise that dominion is by following, by emulating the pattern that God established. And so we work 6 days. We exercise our dominion. We've already talked about that in this series, how we're called in our vocations. Vocations are not just for pastors and teachers and firemen. It's for all of us, for mothers and ditch diggers, for businessmen and for military, and yes, even pastors. And we're all called to exercise our dominion for 6 days and then to rest on the seventh day. So this is the first thing that we see. We're called to emulate that pattern. But as we look at that pattern of 6 days, it also reminds us of something. It's very, very important. Creation means that we have a purpose to our existence. Think of the very word we use, creation. When you create something, you bring it into being. It doesn't just go and come in out of nothing. Creation means that there is a creator. And it reminds us that we are not the random products of chance, but that we have a purpose in our existence. God planned us. He created us by design. He did so lovingly, he did so purposefully, and he did so uniquely. And that's why we have the 6 days of creation. Why? Could God not have created everything at once? Of course he could have. But he specifically chose this pattern because it demonstrates thoughtfulness. It demonstrates purpose. It demonstrates design. It lets us see that God was purposeful in each and every one of his designs as he created the universe. And more so, our being created on the final day of creation, the sixth day, is not accidental. It's not as if, well, maybe I'll create man on this day, and the other day I'll create whales, and then I'll create some birds, and then I'll create algae, and it doesn't matter. He created it in this particular order because he was leading up to man. He was leading up to humanity as the crown of creation. Because of all the animals, of all the plant life, of all the inanimate matter that he created, of none did he say, this one is to be made in my image. It is only humanity, men and women who are created in the image of God. We are the crown of creation. And what it tells us, people of God, and this is important, your existence is not pointless. The fact that you are here this morning is God's wonderful and perfect design. You are not here randomly. You are not a mistake. But God made you because he loves you. And he always had designed the world with you in mind. When you remember the Sabbath day and you remember creation, you realize that your existence has a purpose. It's so sad when we compare that to those who hold the view of evolution with its futility and its pointlessness. Because that's what happens when you hold to this view of evolution, that things just came into being by chance. They don't tell you that at first when you're in school and they're teaching you this stuff. In his book, The Blind Watchmaker, Richard Dawkins, who is an evolutionary biologist and a renowned atheist, had this to say. At least he's being honest about his view. He says, natural selection The blind, unconscious, automatic process which Darwin discovered and which we now know is the explanation for the existence and apparently purposeful form of all life has no purpose in mind. It has no mind and no mind's eye. It does not plan for the future. It has no vision, no foresight, no sight at all. When you hold to the theory of evolution and you hold to natural selection, Dawkins is intellectually honest enough to say that that view, and there's just no purpose. It just happened. A later book of his called River Out of Eden, A Darwinian View of Life, Dawkins had this to say: nature is not cruel, only pitilessly indifferent. This is one of the hardest lessons for humans to learn. We cannot admit that things might be neither good nor evil, neither cruel nor kind, but simply callous, indifferent to all suffering, lacking all purpose. When you hold to this view, there's nothing left to life. In fact, you take up like the 20th century philosophers who said the only question left is to ask, should we commit suicide or not? That's all that's left. But when we remember the Sabbath day, we remember the creation and we remember that there is a creator who created us with purpose and with meaning and with thoughtfulness by design. Of course, when we remember that, we begin to see that that purpose has been further defined for us by God. We see that God has called us together very specifically to tell us that He has something for us. He tells us that we're special, that we were made by God, that we're made like God, that we were made for God, and that ultimately, as Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians 10:31, we are to do all to the glory of God. It is for Him that we exist, and it is in Him that we find our purpose. Of course, people of God, as we remember that pattern, there's one further thing that creation reminds us about, that the Sabbath reminds us of creation, that reminds us about the fact that we are finite. We're finite. As you think of those 6 days, we see that God created us according to a pattern that He established. We didn't establish that. The week, the order of the week, that's not just something where, you know, the first humans gathered together and had a committee in a cave somewhere and decided, how are we going to structure the days? Oh, let's do it according to 7 days. Or they just happened to be looking at the heavens and said, well, let's see how we figured out the calendar. No, God is the one who established the pattern of 7 days as the week. That's built in into every place that you go on earth. It's just part of who we are. And it reminds us that in every way, we live within an order that we have not created. We're finite and we're limited. There's so many things around us that define who we are. God created us and defines the work week for us. He defined who we are in terms of, for example, you can't sit there and say, I choose to not eat and exist forever. You simply have to eat. You have to breathe. You have to drink. You have to sleep. You can't choose to be everywhere or to know everything or to do everything. You are limited in your scope because you are a creature, a creation, and not the creator. And we're called to establish, to live within that established order that God created. So, as we think of the creation, we're reminded that we are finite, but we're also reminded that we have a purpose. We're reminded that God has called us in that purpose to glorify Him and to emulate Him. As we think of the fact that we're finite, though, it points us to our next point. When you remember the Sabbath, you also remember eternity. Yes, we're finite, but it also calls you remember eternity. Because as we've seen, the Sabbath day provides us with physical rest. We need that. In fact, that's what we argued right before I left to Colorado Springs. Human beings need that time of rest. It also calls us to a time of spiritual rest. But the one thing that's very clear, and we saw it as we looked at Hebrews 4 today, right? The reading earlier, Hebrews 3 through 4, is that that rest is not final. This gathering today of the Lord's Day, where we rest physically and we rest spiritually, is pointing forward to a final day, a day of eternity when Jesus returns and makes all things new. This world, the one in which we live, is finite. It has a terminus because God has determined that it will come to an end. And when Jesus returns, a new age will be ushered in. Not a Shirley MacLaine New Age, but the true New Age. We've ruined this world. That's why we need a new one. We ruined it with our sin. We ruined it with our rebellion. And when Jesus came, you have to understand that by His resurrection, He broke this world system and He ushered in a new era. He brought in a new kingdom, one that is growing, one that's expanding, one that is overtaking the whole of this broken world, one heart at a time. The resurrection of Jesus points to that final eternity that is to come, that final rest. On that day, there will be true rest. Rest from sin, rest from trouble, rest from hurt, rest from heartbreak. So even as you remember the Sabbath day, it's a pointer to eternity that is to come. Now, what does that mean for us? Should that not cause you to reflect upon eternity? Should it not cause you to think, how will I live my life in light of eternity? Hebrews, which we've been looking at here, 9:27, has this to say. It is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment. In light of eternity, can you live as you please? Hebrews 10, see, Hebrews has a lot to do with this that we're talking about. Hebrews 10:26, if we deliberately keep on sinning after we have received the knowledge of the truth, no sacrifice for sins is left, but only a fearful expectation of judgment and of raging fire that will consume the enemies of God. It is a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. That's our position. That's where we stand. Eternity is coming. You and I will die and stand before the judgment throne. What hope do we have? Are you living your life in light of that truth? And let me tell you, the author of Hebrews is not all doom and gloom, but he reminds us of the hope that we have as believers in Jesus. That same passage, Hebrews 9:27, let me read the full passage. He says, just as it is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment, so Christ, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time, not to deal with sin, but to save those who are eagerly waiting for Him. So when we remember the Sabbath day, we remember eternity, that a day is coming in which all things will be made new, but on that day will be judgment. And on that day we will give account for all things. And the hope that we have is that, yes, the author of Hebrews just said, you will die and you will be judged. But our hope is in the Christ who came. Who came, he says, the first time to deal with sin by His sacrificial and substitutionary death on the cross, where He paid the price that you and I owe God for our rebellion, our sin against Him. But when He returns, it is no longer to offer salvation, to deal with the sin in our lives, but to gather up all those who have looked to Him and rested upon His finished work. And on that day, as it says here, that's when we will have that salvation for that we have been so eagerly waiting for. So as you reflect on the reality of what's coming, are you prepared to meet God on that day? The Sabbath day calls us to remember eternity. As you think about your eternity and you think about your needs, it ought to cause you then to remember your soul. That's the third thing. Whenever you remember the Sabbath day, it's a call to remember your soul. We've already said that the Sabbath day is a day of rest. That's very clear in the commandment. Stop doing all your regular work. Stop doing all your regular employment. Stop doing all your regular recreation. You need to rest physically. We know that. God built that into His plan because He knows that our bodies need rest. It's ridiculous that in our culture where we emphasize so much about physical care that we ignore the fact that we need rest and God has given us that day. But it does seem like our culture is super emphasizing constantly the care of our bodies. We're constantly being told to eat right, constantly being told to exercise, we're constantly being told to avoid harmful things like drugs and tobacco. You can see tons of plans and diets and advice. They're all out there how to care for your bodies. But there's so little emphasis in our society and in our culture for the needs of the soul. And how desperately do we need to take care of our souls. People of God, if I may put it in the most colloquial of terms, you're more than just a meat bag. You're more than just a body. You were created body and soul. You're not just a collection of atoms and energy. As we said, you're eternal. We reflect God. We're made in His image. And part of the way in which we reflect Him is God is a spirit. And we too have a spiritual side to who we are, our soul. And we're called to take care of it. So many of us, even, dare I say, professing Christians, give so little time to caring for their souls. It's like a beautiful mansion sitting up on a hill, and it's been abandoned, and it's overrun with weeds, and the paint is chipping away. And that's what the soul of so many of us looks like, is we've not given it care. And sooner or later, that building will collapse. Unless you take care of your soul and look to it, then you will become spiritually exhausted. Perhaps you already are. And when you are like that, that's when sin overtakes you. That's when you collapse. I think the problem for so many of us is that we're so busy with everything else, with our work and with our recreation, and even our families, that we tend to neglect our souls. And yet our souls need rest. We need time to feed them. We need time to clothe them, as it were. We need time to strengthen them, to patch up all the hurts and bruises that we have in our souls. Paul puts it this way to Timothy in 1 Timothy 4:7. He says, train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. So he's saying, he doesn't say ignore your physical care. He's saying there's some value in taking care of your bodies, but there's so much more in pursuing godliness. Because that has value not just for now, but later. For that, you have to take care. God has given us the means of grace, the Word, sacraments, and prayer. He's provided us the means, the gymnasium, as it will, the tools, the weights, the machines, whatever you want to call it, for working out your soul, the Word and the sacraments and prayer. Make use of them. Whenever you remember the Sabbath, remember the needs of your soul, and remember that God has provided this day for rest, not just for your body, but so that you can feed and care for your soul. So as we remember then, we remember creation, we remember eternity, we remember your soul, we also remember your King. What do I mean by that? When you come to worship, or when you come on the Lord's Day to worship, what are you doing? What is worship? Worship means that you are acknowledging the worth of another. You're acknowledging and submitting to one who is greater than yourself. In this case, God. Is it not what worship is? If you want to just kind of reduce it to its bare bones? Look at one of the most common calls to worship we use, Psalm 95:6. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. There's that language of bowing down, kneeling. Surely we are in an act of submission, acknowledging the worth of another. That's what worship is. When we gather for worship, we are acknowledging that this other is sovereign over our lives. Psalm 47:2, for the Lord, the Most High, is to be feared, a great King over all the earth. So that's what we do in worship. We acknowledge that we are submitting to another who is sovereign over us, whom we call Lord and Master. We are acknowledging His worth. We are acknowledging that we obey Him and we submit ourselves to Him. In other words, we are acknowledging that we answer to God. When we gather then for worship, the world takes note because it sees that we're resting from our usual labors and we're coming to worship and acknowledge this one who is greater. And at first, that seems nuts. Because whenever you take a day off, like Sunday, you are risking making less money. You're risking falling behind in your profession or in your pursuits. You're risking not participating in events with other people, schools. You're risking the disapproval of the society around you. But when you do that, because so often that's what we look at. Oh, look at all that I'm losing. But what you are doing is you're demonstrating to the world that you are subject to an authority of someone who is greater than yourself. You're demonstrating your obedience to that someone other than yourself. And the world sees that you do indeed answer to God and that He is more important. It also demonstrates your faith, because it shows that you're trusting in this great King who is your sovereign to bless you and to take care of you, even when you take a break from your worldly labors. God had promised Israel, when you come and worship me on the Sabbath day, don't worry, I will still make sure that your crops grow, and I will provide for you. In fact, I will bless you beyond what you would have gone in had you gone to work. Israel didn't always trust him. The same thing applies to us. When you remember the Sabbath day, you're being called to remember not just your Creator, but the fact that your Creator is your King, that He is sovereign over you, that you have come to acknowledge and spend time with Him, and in so doing, you trust that He will care for you. It has a lot to say about our condition of our relationship with God, how we treat the Lord's Day. Of course, as we talk about the King, who are we talking about? None other than Jesus Himself, right? When Jesus entered into this world, you remember that time when He came to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday? As He walked in, what did the people cry out? Hosanna! Blessed is He who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel, we read in John 12:13. They recognized Him as the King. But I do want to say this. Jesus, there are many kings. We think today of presidents and prime ministers all the same. But this King is different from every other king. Because even as He came, we read in Matthew 21:5, behold, your King is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a beast of burden. This is a King who is humble. I don't want to get into politics, but when we look at the White House, we don't see a whole lot of humility. It's not a trait of many of our rulers. This is the King who created all things, and He came to us in humility. What's more, He came to us on a cross. Pilate also wrote, it says in John 19:19, an inscription, and put it on the cross. It read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Now think about how amazing that is. Pilate, unbeknownst and not understanding, recognized the truth. This one on the cross is the King. As Tim Keller often puts it, a King on a cross. What an amazing thing. That's the kind of King whom we have. We come here to acknowledge His worth, His sovereignty over our lives, and to acknowledge what He's done for us, and to praise Him for His willingness to go to the cross on our behalf, that He might usher in that eternity, that rest, spiritual and physical, which we so desperately need. A King on a cross. But make no mistake, He's King nevertheless. He says in Mark 10:45, even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give His life a ransom for many. He is a servant, but He is the King of all. In Revelation 1:5, it tells us He is the ruler of the kings of the earth, and Revelation 19:16 calls Him the King of kings and Lord of lords. So yes, He is humble. Yes, He is the King on the cross. Yes, He is the suffering servant of Isaiah 53. Yes, He's the one who washed the disciples' feet, but He is the one who reigns, and even now sits on the throne at the right hand of the Father, and even now hears the prayers of His people, and even now is unfolding history in perfect accord with all of God's eternal decree. That's the King whom we have. When you remember the Sabbath day, you remember your King. But even as you remember your King, you remember one last thing. You remember grace. You can't say, remember the Sabbath day, without remembering grace. We saw in verse 11 that the Sabbath is rooted in the creation. But the Ten Commandments, as you know, are printed twice in the Bible. Here in Exodus 20, but then also in Deuteronomy 5. And what's interesting is in Deuteronomy 5, the commandment is exactly the same, except the reason given for it is not the creation reason that we just read in verse 11, but it's one of redemption. Deuteronomy 5:15, after it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, it says, you shall remember, there's that word again, remember. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Interesting. We get these two reasons. He created you in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Therefore, he commands you to keep the Sabbath day. But by the same token, he also led you out of Egypt and redeemed us. And because of that, we also remember the Sabbath day. You might say, that doesn't make any sense. We've not been pulled out of Egypt. We were not in bondage to the Egyptians. We were not slaves building great monuments out of straw, little bricks made of straw and mud. No, but we've been in a greater bondage than even that. We have been in bondage to sin, and it's gripped our hearts and our lives ever since that day in the garden when our first parents rebelled against God. And what God has done through the greater Exodus, greater than any coming out of Egypt, but through Jesus, the great Exodus of coming out of sin and despair, God has brought us into a new life of freedom. The one who created us, the one who gave us every good thing, right? James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. That one who has given us all good things, we have turned our back on him and rebelled against him. And what did God owe us? Nothing. Would he have been fully justified if he had said, I've had enough and I'm done with these people? But he didn't. So remembering the Sabbath day forces us to remember grace, because God sent his son Jesus to do the greater Exodus and to pull us out of that world of sin and misery in which we existed and bring us into a new world of grace and life and peace, a life with Christ. Those famous words from John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only Son of God. And so it is that with which we are left. What are we to do? What are we to do? We remember grace. We remember that God has come in the person of Jesus to save us. And if we believe, we will not be condemned. But if we don't believe, then we're already condemned in our rebellion and sin. The Sabbath day reminds us once again of the great grace that God has given us. We're really left with the only thing. You remember when the Magi, I was trying to remember how I wanted to say that. The Magi came to Jesus and they say, where is he who is the King of the Jews? For we have come following a star, and we have come to what? To worship him. That's the only thing that's left for us to do. To worship him, to turn to him, and to accept him. And as the author of Hebrews 3 and 4 told us a little while ago, to abandon our works. All those things that you have attempted to do to make yourself right with God, to leave those behind and instead to turn to Jesus and trust in his redemptive work. Because in his grace, he came to redeem each and every one of us. He says, come to me all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. There's that rest we've been talking about. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. That's what Jesus offers. All this we can see when we remember the Sabbath day. We remember our creation. We remember eternity. We remember that we have to care for our souls. We remember our great King who rules over us and to whom we are to worship. And we remember the grace that he has shown us in Jesus Christ. Let us pray.